Welcome to the first regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Facilities Committee in the new year, January 4th, 2017. I'm Deb Buckley, Chair of the Public Facilities Committee, and I am a counselor from Ward 5. To my left is Susan Albright, Counselor at Large from Ward 2, and Vice Chair of the Committee. To her left is Mark Laredo, Counselor at Large from Ward 7. And on the other side of the table is Carol Lappin, Ward Counselor from Ward 8, and our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. We are not joined at the table by National Grid this evening, which is the first item, but we do have our city engineer, John Dagger, and he will join us for the first item. The first item is a public hearing, item number 439-16, which is a National Grid petition for a grant of location to install and maintain 175 feet of 4-inch main in Ruane, did I pronounce that correctly? Circle on the distance 3 Jackson and Ruane Road, easterly to house number 12 for a new gas service. We had a map in our packet. We're joined by President Scott Lennon, Counselor at Large from Ward 1. Yes, very good. So we're on item 1, which is the public hearing. Haven't opened the public hearing yet, and John Dagger is going to make the case for the new gas service.
Sure, we received a petition and reviewed it on the DPW behalf. There are no issues from our side of the table. It's primarily extending a gas main to the house that's under construction currently, and they're going from oil to gas.
Okay, and the condition of the street?
The last page in 1987, and it's worn pretty
well.
And it'll be restored to city standards.
Is it public or public?
It's public.
It's public. Okay, I'm guessing this is in Ward 8. Am I wrong about that? It's not. Okay. I don't know where it is.
It's Ward 3.
Where does it say that?
Oh, yeah, right here.
Oh, okay. All right. So Ward 3. We don't have anything here from Ward 3. So I, with no comments, I'm going to open the public hearing. Is there anyone here to speak on this item? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing, and I would like a motion.
That we were going to do this for 5 minutes and then we're going to go right into the
So everybody has their map and the memo from yesterday? Okay, there's extra copies of the memo for the committee members if you haven't read it. Okay, it's very helpful.
Yep. Come on in, folks.
Is the chair in there tonight? So we're going to go on to the second item. We are joined by members of the Public Transportation and Safety Committee. Have you already, Senator Sikoni, opened your meeting and introduced your members?
I haven't done that yet.
Okay, do you want to do that right now?
All right. Let's see. For Public Safety Transportation, I have Councilor Cody, I have Councilor Fuller, I have Councilor Hani, I have myself, Councilor Cody, I have Councilor Lipa, Councilor Blazer, Councilor Yates. And I believe that's it.
Okay. And we are also joined by Councilor Leary and Councilor Castahan. And we are now joined by Councilor Bruce Hall Blazer, who's on the Public Facilities Committee for Ward 3. So the item we are meeting jointly on is 717, is the Commissioner of Public Works requesting approval of the design and installation of intersection improvements, including a traffic signal and bump outs at the intersection of Harvard and Washington Street. And just for everyone's education in the room, we have maps in our packet. I had suggested they were a little challenging to read, and Nicole Friedman provided us with additional area maps and a memorandum that explains the background and purpose of the project pretty succinctly, so I hope you all got that yesterday and are able to go through it. And there's also a photograph drawing in the memo that shows us the entire intersection in one piece instead of having to be together often. So with that, we are joined by members of the Transportation Division, and Nicole Friedman, Director of Transportation, and Jim McGonigal, our Commissioner of Public Works. So, Sergeant Babcock, are you here to the site? Am I? Yes. All right, excellent. I don't think I'm missing anybody else who's here on this item. Am I wrong about that? So I'm going to give it over to the Commissioner. Take it away. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good evening, everyone. Happy New Year. We're here to
ask for acceptance of a design and upgrade of traffic signals and pedestrian improvements in Harvard and Washington. This is one of the city's crash hot spots. Last year we had two pedestrian accidents in 1 month, one of those being one of our high school seniors in town. And again, so this is on our list. Police have brought this to our attention. We also applied for the Complete Streets grant for this project. So we have been approved for $400,000 towards this project through our Complete Streets grant. The construction estimate for this project is $530,000. And if we stay on track, we're looking to have this completed by June 30th of this year. Nicole's here. She's going to go through a short presentation with us, and then we'll take your questions and hopefully provide all the answers.
Okay. Is
there
a possible
where I go? Sure, I got it.
This is exactly why. Just to orient you, I always like to show what the location is. We are talking about Harvard and Washington Street. There's like many of you already know, but between Newtonville and Newton Corners. And also in terms of orienting yourself, this is a bird's eye view, but it's quite a well guarded remnant, as many of you might know. Newtonville Dental to Clean Cleaners and the far side entrance to the Newtonville commuter rail. This is one of the most straightforward projects we will do. It's about safety. It's about safety for pedestrians, for bikes, and for motor vehicles. It has been recognized as a crash hot spot for the city. This is our 2016 fact book, the draft that will be coming out soon. And in particular, it is a hot spot for pedestrians and bicycle classes, and that's really a significant because those are vulnerable users that don't have metals surrounding them to protect them. But from 2010 to 2015, 17 classes, three of them pedestrians, one of them bicycling. And as many of you know, we put in a similar rapid flashing beacon, and yet the classes still persist. So we still have five classes, one pedestrian and one bicycle, and that's just in the last year. Okay, so what are the existing conditions? Number one, you have a very wide crossing, a four-lane bus crossing, 58 feet. That is a very wide crossing for anyone to get across. There are two rapid flashing beacons that is instead of a signal, and that flashes. So really, the pedestrians are still waiting for the cars to stop, and they don't really stop. You're about 1,400 vehicles per hour, rush hour coming here. Do the math, that's about a car every 3 seconds. And that's what the pedestrian needs to cross every 3 seconds there's a car coming by. And you're about to stop currently right here. When we signalize it, that will be in the middle of an intersection, so we'll need to address that. And there's actually not a crosswalk on this side. At peak hours, we have about 21 pedestrians crossing per hour. Four of them are crossing on this side, which shows that there's a strong desire line. It's just crossing there, not even on a crosswalk. That is quite sound. And lastly, you do have some traffic conditions coming off of Harvard. For cars that are trying to take the left, the level of service is E. E is below average. C is actually average, so no great inflation in the state. So they are actually having a difficult time making that turn of the bus. So what are the improvements that we are going to make? Number one, we are going to fully signalize the intersection. That is what we are proposing, putting in a standard full signal that has all of the modern equipment. It will have vehicle detection, so that it will assist with the timing to make sure that if there happens to be no car here coming on Harvard Street, the lights not to turn. Push button activated signals for the pedestrian. So we'll be able to push a button. And the light will turn for them. Everything will be fully ADA compliant. We have the ATS signals to help individuals with disabilities, and you'll have modern curb ramps as well. We intend to add the crosswalk to the side of the street. In particular, now that we have garden remedies, we're anticipating significantly more pedestrian volume, and the crosswalk on both sides will be helpful. I think one of the most exciting features of this. Is that this whole side will be bumped out. So that's going to significantly shorten the crossing distance for the pedestrians. It will also calm the traffic. The cars that are speeding will be less inclined to speed, will actually reduce the volume of speeding. It should improve the visibility for those pedestrians. Right now, the pedestrian is standing here, and they have cars parking, they can't see. Now, they're standing up here, they're better visible, and that makes it, of course, safer. And as I mentioned before, you will no longer have the bus stop here in the middle of the intersection. You legally cannot have a bus stop in the middle of the intersection. And then you can move it to this location or a location near the offset intersection. Okay, so this, I realize, is a little confusing as a map, but I'll walk you through it, and hopefully it will be better. So in terms of options, the primary option is just where do we put this bus stop? Where do we look at it? Again, the bus stop is currently here on the north side of the intersection. It's going to be up the clearance, the dental, garden remedies, and the common park. So option number one, move the bus stop to here. I'm going to show you a different view so you can orient yourself again. Right, this area is actually a vacant property. You'll see on the trees and the title on it. If we do this, we do have to remove four parking spots. That is not part of an actual building right now. If we alternatively move the bus stop to right here, it's right in front of the building, but it only loses three parking spots. But then again, there's a trade-off. You want it in front of the building and not in front of the building. We look at another option of removing the parking
in front of the cleaners. You can see that. And actually, putting a bus stop there. And what we found is actually we could not get enough space to physically do that to meet MBTA criteria for a bus stop here. So we had to eliminate this as an option. But what we know is there's actually a preference. These spaces are used the most. We did some occupancy studies over different times of the day, different days of the week. We were used about 90% of the time. These ones were used about 60% of the time, and those ones were used about 50% of the time. So highest use, second highest use, lowest use. I just wanted to do another review so you know exactly what we're looking at. So here in Congress again, here's your driving revenue. The option one, that was the lowest use parking, was over here in the consumer vacant lot, and the bus stop would go down and take the fourth spot. And then you have your option two, and it would go to three spots. And that is a nice, simple presentation for you. I do want to say on the south side of the road, we're not moving the bus stop, so I need to show the south side of the road. We do lose one parking spot on the south side, just because there's one that's where the bus stop is. But I was told to keep it very simple, so until conversation, I hope that's sufficient, because you have a memo, you have the sketches, and now you have it.
I'm going to call on Councilor Albright first, who is at the business meeting today. I wanted to ask you, Nicole, can you put on the screen while we're talking the most complete picture of the intersection that you have?
That's good. Just to round out Nicole's presentation, Jake and I and several staff were just at a presentation that you all did for the businesses in this neighborhood.
Yep.
And I think they came to a conclusion on which option they preferred. There was a whole lot of scrum and drain about losing parking spaces, but I think they came around to understand why it was important and why it was safer. And you can tell us, or Jake can tell us.
So at the end of the day, they prefer option one, losing the four spaces with a bus stop there in the green area by the trees, as opposed to losing the three spaces with a bus stop directly in front of the business there.
And that's not a surprise. That's what we would definitely prefer to hear from them.
Just for the record, that Shane Mark, our director of operations, who's also been joined by Councilor Auchincloss from Ward 2. Commissioner?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Also, I'd like to introduce Jim Fitzgerald. He's from Environmental Partners. He's our design engineer on this project, so we have some great expertise here also. It did just come from the public meeting, so that's why it's just coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I have Barbara and then Mark.
So I'm just wondering, I'm sure it's just physics, but why is it that one option takes four spots and one only takes six?
It is exactly physics. And the whole physics of it is the bus needs to get into the spot.
Yeah.
It's really just where these spots are. So in this case, here, the bus needs to pull in. It can count this driveway as some of it, but then there are spots in the other one that's here. It's just that. So
if the
half spot goes.
The picture more so than the diagram. So the Google
view
to call
me. Yeah, that's
another.
I think I can actually have Jim show you exactly where it is, but it would be in option one, it's 1, 2, 3, 4.
No, 1, 2, 3.
Sorry, 1, 2, 3, and then the fourth one is actually at the intersection.
So this seems very appropriate to me. What are you going to do to synchronize the lights both at near the Whole Foods and then to go towards Newtonville?
Yeah. And Jim, what's up there for that specific profession?
Well, this project was really focused on safety improvements at the Harvard Washington intersection. Long-term, we did talk about potentially interconnecting the signals together as hard wires to run the conduit throughout in between intersections. However, the problem with doing that obviously would be cost, and there's been some discussion about long-term improvements along the corridor as a whole.
And we would say at that point, that's when that would be included. So at this point, the intersection as it stands today would be an isolated, fully actuated intersection, meaning it would have spectrum on all the approaches.
It will be ready for compatibility.
It will not be compatible.
It will not be compatible. The others actually need a lot of upgrades.
I'm all in favor of, look, I get it, this intersection is not safe, you've got to do this, but I'm very concerned that we're putting in another traffic light on Washington Street in an area where we have a tremendous amount of congestion, and there's another traffic light a couple hundred yards away at the most, and they're not going to be synchronized at all.
So, Counselor, if I can just add to that one thing that we haven't said is, just like today, when the button is pushed and the yellow come on and traffic eventually stops, this is going to be free-flowing traffic along Washington Street until the pedestrian button is pushed, which the intersection will stop the traffic, which is very similar to what it's supposed to function today. Or if a car is at Harbor that needs to turn onto Washington Street, once it detects that car, then it will go in a cycle. So it's not tremendously different than how it's supposed to be functioning today.
Well, wait a minute, but now... You are going to have cars on Harvard Street. They're going to be turning. You're now... Don't get me wrong, I want you to do the project, but I'm extremely concerned about traffic flow. We just finished a presentation last night about West Newton, where we're talking about making the corridor slower,
safer.
And I think it's appropriate to do that, but I'm concerned that there's a main artery, and we're not accounting for it.
And we have on the CIP actually an entire Washington corridor for the project and that really coming fast at us because the project would be slated for completion in 2021, which is saying it would be starting next year anyway. Mm-hmm. So this one we've already planned ahead. The signal will be ready to be compatible. We'll have all the upgraded equipment, and we'll start thinking about that when we start that.
So just so I'm clear, there's nothing we can do to make the two lights synchronized in any fashion whatsoever?
You could upgrade the controllers at the other intersections as well, so that you could sync them and they would be GPS connected.
How much would that cost?
Looking at the craft sheet intersection.
Ballpark.
Are you just talking about the craft sheet?
I've got for by far the closer one.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it might be $1,500,
depending on what equipment, how deep the equipment is inside the cabin. I know the
controller site here is not appropriate for it. I respectfully suggest you at least look into it and try to get some price on it. Let's keep going, and I would like to hear, then somebody may have this question anyway, how close you are to your budget numbers, how safe you think they are as you're looking at them right now. President Leonard has the next question.
Just quickly on the vehicle detection and kind of about what Mark was saying, Councilor was saying. Is it one vehicle and it stops it? Because we have a similar light now at Pearl. We have a new light at Pearl and Watertown. And the understanding was that it'll change once there are cars on Pearl. It seems to be changing when there's one car. So everybody on Watertown Street stops, the one car goes, and everyone on Watertown sitting there.
So I
just didn't know if it was like two or three to five cars.
There are all sorts of different settings that could be adjusted to address that. There's a delay timing, for instance, that once the vehicle, that one car is detected, there could be a delay to see whether or not they turn right on red, for instance, and go away or something like that, so that you can have more of that platooning that you're trying to create by having multiple cars, not just one. The other thing is that could be happening is there could be a relatively short cycle length for that side street approach, so that's only enough for that one vehicle to get out
couple sentence staff when there is not known vehicle on the detector and the city staff to the main line.
Okay, well, just to follow, Watertown, I don't believe, is 1,400 cars an hour, but I'm saying where the pearl is, this is more, so I would, to the point, maybe look at what the timing will be with the detection here, to ensure that it's not queuing at craft, which is not too far away.
And an important thing also when it comes to signalization also is after you're done with designing it and getting your signals installed, is improving the timing and the settings in the field after the fact to make sure that things are operating as good as they can.
Is that why Shane's gotten that down? Because he's going to go look at
the tonight.
Our traffic is
good. I also want to say, which we will do, we'll make that an ad alternate to GPS controller. So if our bids do come in low enough and we have it within our budget, we're more than happy to put that in.
Okay.
And again, once, as Jim said, a lot of times we design these things, we do the traffic counts, and the end result is different from what studies tell us. So again, these signals are pretty far apart. Again, it's not only about pedestrian safety, but we see excessive speeds there also, that sudden bad traffic effect too. So we want to slow the vehicle down there also, which is part of that. And we will definitely put that in as an ad alternate. So we have that option.
That's great.
For our safety committee. We do have some contingency in it. It would be great to do some well enough to add that.
Just to follow up on that, so you have contingency. We were talking about an item that was approved in the current year CIP, and we're glad that we have the $400,000 grant, but the construction, is that going to begin this spring before the next budget season?
This spring.
It is, yes. So if we wanted to augment it, we may have to take money out of the next year's budget.
Well, we do have the $530,000 approved, but we didn't know if we were going to receive this grant. So we do have some flexibility here.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Thanks. Councilor Leary, and we've been joined by Councilor Horton.
I just want to go on record and say that I'm 100% support this improvement. It's a safety issue. People in Ward 1, and I'm sure Ward 2 as well, that I'm speaking to my constituents, ask me about this at the time. So I think it's critical that we prioritize safety over anything else. And I'll also say, riding with that cost, was not a cost, what they call it, RRST, and RRST. If anything, it's confusing because if you always slow down, because I'm terrified I'm not going to see connection anymore. And when the light flashes, blind you. And so cars actually slow down and say, hey, it's ivory, because I don't ever know if it's coming to cut me off or not. We took the light red on my hope that I can stop. And I never see congestion in that area. The congestion sometimes from taking a left turn or congestion on
At this point, the plans are being finalized. I believe we have not included red turn on red because of the number of turns and the visibility from the corner. So we have adequate visibility when you're turning right around the corners, and the red turn movements are not accepted.
So red turn on red will be allowed.
Correct.
Okay.
On those flashing lights, the yellow lights, I thought we got rid of all of them, because this is not the first time there have been accidents. It gives you a false sense of security, and I thought the city was done with those. So I hope after this we are done with them and replace them with arc lights, which are reasonable and turn red.
I will say they are all important tools in a toolkit when placed in an appropriate location. This literally is a full signal is required.
Oh, I agree.
So I would never rule out using an RRST in the future, but it has to be exact right scenario
This is not, and we will work with you very much so you would understand exactly what it is. There's actually a lot of research out there on where these are effective, where they are appropriate, whether or not, where they make things safer or not. You know, if you have low volume, you know, middle, you know, not at an intersection,
right.
Much
in our experience, it's only been a discussion.
Correct, and we would need to follow that
advice. Great.
Can I just speak to that one? I learned tonight for the first time that you're supposed to stop when those lights start flashing.
One question about the potential of getting the GPS down the street. Is this something we can reuse? Because if we do it for Grass Creek, can we take that $500,000 GPS out and put it in a different light if we're talking about replacing it in the next few years?
If we didn't need it?
Yes.
These are mostly the plug-and-play components.
So we can
buy we're buying
the
equipment, so we can add these
features. Okay. Because right, I know we have some lights that we can't upgrade.
We also have more functions.
You could use the GPS component and just pass out there. If you were reconstructing Washington Street, what's a much more reliable system is the high wire system. The intersections together with conduit from intersection to intersection, I think it's much more reliable. So if there was part of a larger Washington Street project, for instance, you might consider running that conduit all the way down, maybe reusing the GPS somewhere else in the city.
So it can be reused in an older light?
It can be reused in an appropriate controller. Right now, the Grass Street intersection has a different type of controller from most in the city. So, including the one that we would be recommending for the Harvard student session. So you have to have the same type of controller.
Okay, just wondering, because I know we've been trying to put pedestrian, you can't just put a pedestrian, you know, component in a light. So this one we could move around.
So we're trying to standardize all of our equipment also going forward.
Thank you. Other than that, I'm totally on board.
Great. I have Sergeant Babcock and then Brian here.
Quick question on how the people are crossing from the sidewalk from the side of the turnpike onto the other side of the turnpike concurrent?
We are actually, yes, we all say are concurrent at the time for the
intersection. Yeah. Going in. I don't know. So you're allowing that center of residence here.
And we look at that always, it's often, we have a leading pedestrian in the hall, and we always look at, we work a lot with Walk Boston, and usually they say if you have less than 250 right turns, then they're comfortable with a concurrent with a right turn on that. So they are, I always reference them because, I mean, they are pedestrian advocates, and they're just about the best in the country, they're known nationally. So when they say we are good with this, and they're strongly encouraging us to try. But as you know, this came up last night, improving our traffic engineer has already prepared a memo, so we are finalizing it, and we will hope to continue working with everyone to do some education on how concurrent work, how exclusive work, and get people with education to really help make decisions also, really.
Okay, thank you. Brian and then Mark?
The following for Barbara's question. Why is the fourth space locked under option one to the left where the block is for option two?
It was three spaces here.
Right.
And then it's one at the intersection because we're adding that second block.
Oh,
that's two.
I'm sorry, one thing to point out, that when that aerial photo was taken, like before we changed the geometric changes to that parking lot, so I think the parking spaces have changed a little bit. Okay, thank you.
Okay,
I just want to follow up on something you said about conduit and doing it from light to light. And goes to you, Commissioner. As we're doing construction work on major roads, what are you thinking about in regard to putting conduit in as we're ripping up a road and we're going from intersection to intersection?
No, we're definitely going to be doing it going forward, especially where we see, again, with the signals changing. If we want to do camera detection down the road, we want to put cameras on these intersections, we need that conduit to run fiber. Also be able to have the ability down the road, if we wanted to have a traffic control center, we need to be able to do that. So we're definitely looking at putting conduit in where we're going to be tearing up the entire road.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Wow. So, Michelle,
just a quick one. Because if we do the intersection and we decide not to do the concurrent part of the signal, is that easy to change?
You can always change the time of the signal.
Okay, so that's an option going forward. So I voiced my opinion on that one.
Yeah. So I'm ready to move approval in yeah. Great. Thank you. And is KFC all set with questions? I think we have a pretty. Oh, I'll move it there. Okay. We have a motion in public facilities to move approval. All those in favor? Unanimous. Thank you very much.
Public safety.
I'll move it. Thank you.
Okay. Unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Perfect timing.
Thank you.
I believe we have lost the S&P, but we have programs and services still in the room.
They picked up programs
and services. So have you opened, you haven't opened your meeting yet.
No.
I'd like to open your meeting and introduce your members.
Yes, this is a regular schedule. This is the Programs and Services Committee with their community. We have Council Larry, Council San Jolo, Council Hesman here, which will be right back in. And
thank you. And we are also joined by our library director and board of trustees. And I'm going to let you introduce yourselves as you come forward. I have to read the item into the agenda, okay? So I can take our agenda is item number 388. On the first page, actually. 388-16, Design of the Mayor requesting the City Council authorize the Board of Library Trustees to apply for any state funds, et cetera. Grant funds for the library renovation. I'm going to read these quickly because we have a story to tell. And item number 388-16, approval of the conceptual library design for the grant application. Our intention is to vote these NANs this evening. The story has changed, and I think we'd like to invite the director to join us at the table, if you would, and tell us how the story has changed.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us tonight on this. Our board, President Jeff Herman, trustees of Barbara Lipsky, Barbara Melt, Dana Hansen, and my assistant director, Bill Grabowski, with us tonight to help us hopefully answer any questions you might have on this. But yes, we do have a disappointing situation in terms of after we were going through what we were expecting to do tonight is to talk about the great plans that our architect, very strong library architectural firm, LLB, was designing for us. And just before that, they gave us a prompt document, and that was not within found that we were going to present to the city. We thought we were developing great plans to do an addition renovation project that would meet the changing needs of our citizenry here in Newton and leverage the state grant opportunity, which only comes up every 5 or so years, to help us out with that with a grant that would have been 30% plus of the total project cost. We had some appealing ideas that I thought we would share with you, closing the front plaza and capturing some space of the interior for that, putting that addition on the walnut pit side, doubling the size of the children's room with a high point. Speaking of doubling, though, with the number we had in the CIP from the estimate, we had begun the study in 2014, which was escalated to mid-2017 for $33 million. The price we got 2 weeks ago was $65 million, so nearly double that expectation. For a building size, it was about 18% bigger, so it wasn't that we had really increased the program all that much. We were seeing some surprising numbers just in terms of the interior renovation cost. Both projects had supposedly priced the interior full remodel, take down most of the walls, and put things back together again. The market seems to have changed, despite the escalations that the 3-year-old estimate had put in for the Macy's. So we took a quick look at some obvious trimmings. It was the cost estimate on target, were there things that could be trimmed out, and looking at the reasonable gap, we would have had to bring it down to $20 or $25 million to even be willing to start a conversation about whether it was a good idea. Maybe $5 to $6 million could have been trimmed out by trimming some of the things that we had talked about in the design process and, changing mechanical systems from one of the more expensive ones to an average price one and things like that, but that wasn't going to get us there. We did a quick exploration of how we might have to adjust program size in terms of square footage that we were asking for and to see if it was feasible to reduce things. And we thought we might come up with a feasible plan by taking things that, while they would have been good improvements, maybe weren't at the top of the priority list. But we really, we've got to file something January 26th. and we didn't really have the time to redraw anything and replace anything and go through the approval process that was my social license to be sure that we're filing something that's credible. And we didn't really want to ask you to file something that we knew was going to change. That's not the way to go about things. One of the other things that I was daunting of this project was, as it became clear that likely timing for the state classes, it was becoming also a disincentive. Compare my Milton project with, Milton Public Library. We filed a grant in 2005 in that grant round, and I opened the building in 2009. So, very quick process, everything's a ding, you know, we got in the first year of the, you know, grant awards at the top of their waiting list. We got 74% yes vote from the town first thing, but I was having to go back again and again and get the thing built right at the time that the construction prices were plummeting, came in with a big positive thing. This project was looking like we were going to end up near the end of the waiting list because the buildings tend to get near the front. Buildings like Milton, where the addition was 75% of the total, seemed to get a higher need score. We were building a 25% addition in this plan. And as the commissioners looked at the 30 letters of intent that they had, the NBLC staff, they said, they're probably going to be near the end of the waiting list. Which, in one sense, was good because we knew we didn't want to go for any kind of debt exclusion vote very soon. But on the other sense, it seems like 4, 5, 6 years on the waiting list, and then go through a 4 to 5 year process of getting product created, so that's like 10 years up. So that's kind of daunting, and that was a very different experience that we were lining up than I had in Milton. It's certainly nice to have a complete project and wrap everything up in one go and get it done, but also daunting was the whole process of actually closing that site down and trying to do temporary quarters check. Our project managers had put $4 million of that cost in the sense of renting something like 50,000 square feet of commercial space in England for 2 years. So that was a big part of it. And you know, even if we were able to use city buildings, we'd probably have some costs and build out and things like that to get it done. That was a pretty daunting thing. But that leads us to, you know, what's the obvious path forward? And that's probably trying to make some incremental changes, operate the building through those changes, and hopefully get some solid achievements done in a much tighter time frame. What those are, what's the first priority, what's the tackle for us, is the open question we'll have to be investigating over the next short while.
I know there's lots of questions. I'm going to call on Susan first, and part because she's been attending all of the design review committee meetings, along with Dick Blake, which is another committee meeting. So would you like to add?
Yeah, so Dick and I participated in the building working group with Jeff and Dana. One piece that was just back into the story that needs to be told is that there was an ambitious archives project as part of this project. And that archive project actually brought the cost of the project up to $77 million, which was even more of a kind of shocking figure. So I think one of the things that we've done now is separated out the archive project as one project that needs to be dealt with, and the library, which is another project, and they can move on their own time frame. So I know one of the issues that often needs to be part of the story is that the archive is small. But it's sitting right in the middle of where you could put your children's room.
The current one.
And so our David Olson has been sort of shepherding, trying to shepherd the archives project. And if we can get that project moving along and get some plans for the archives, that could free up your space in the library so that you could have that for the children's program or whatever it is you plan to do with it. So I think that piece of the story needed also to be told. And I felt better about the outcome when I realized that, you know, that the administration didn't want to fund this until it was a debt exclusion, and most likely not for 5 years. And maybe the next round of granting is in another 5 years. So the timing kind of works out, even though it's unfortunate that you do all this build-up and it doesn't come right away. But I think in the end, I think this is going to work out okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sid and Amy Ventrell?
No, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay.
Certainly disappointing. I just wanted to pick up from where Susan left off. When you presented to the city council, the part that was most surprising to me was the children's program.
Okay.
It's clear that there's real need there with what we're currently doing. I just wonder, are you considering, based on what Susan was saying as well, is that the first incremental improvement that you would make, do you think?
It is the most important and it's the most difficult with the space allocations we've got. So I think that is almost a key thing to figure out what is the right path forward on that, and then everything else can sort of fit in around it. And what happens first in terms of sequencing, we'll have to see what makes sense in terms of the phasing of a set of projects.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I agree with you that it's very supporting that we're moving forward with another project. I think it was in 2014 when we first came to Rivers and Services, going out the sort of design conceptual plan. I guess I'm wondering who in the administration was helping to assist you and the trustees in separating this and overseeing and working with the architect. I gather that it went through design review, but I'm just wondering, like, usually you have someone from the building department or someone sort of leading the charge with you, holding
their
hand. So I'm just wondering who that was.
Yeah, over the last year, we did have a lot of help from particularly Alex Stelkar and his expertise in how to arrange things and line this up with the design review committee and getting their input was very, very helpful.
But at some point, I mean, even though the architect, you know, sort of hit you at the end, at some point, you saw him saying, you know, this project is just a, you know, mm-hmm. Here was your wish list, but this project is just getting ready for this.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody said that?
Yeah, the problem was that it wasn't much bigger just in terms of square footage that we had in our program than we did in 2014.
Construction costs have gone way up.
Yeah. And that estimate had a 4% per year for the 3 years.
They haven't gone up. No, they've doubled. Almost, I've talked to businesses around here, some of the costs have doubled on
them. I think that there's a bit of project creep going on in this project. And I think things, one thing, well, as I actually learned the other day at a meeting, it all started because the carpet needed to be replaced. So if you can imagine going from a carpet that needed to be replaced to a $77 million project, you can imagine that there might have been some project creep. And I'm not sure, you know, if you can point a finger at any place or anybody. It just sort of happened, and the budget numbers didn't come in until the end, and that's, I think.
Yeah. Like the reverse. I mean, it was more of a situation that the carpet is 25 years old and
yes.
The building, but it was a situation of, let's hold off the projects that we had about replacing that until we know what we're doing in
yeah.
a bigger picture.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you're going to have some money in your budget. You're going to be requesting money in your budget this year, certainly to replace the carpet. and that you're going to have a working group going forward that is going to look at things like, well, what happens if we can move the archives out of the middle of the first floor of the
right.
building? And maybe you'll look at some, I don't know, you can look at additions without looking at what I saw anyway in design review, which was the most shocking to me, was really a complete gut of the interior of the building. And that was both startling and a little bit alarming for me, I have to say, because this building is 30 years new, and it's a very good building. So I understand that it's growing, and that's a great thing because it's a fabulous library.
Yeah.
But it's hard to stomach where there's so much need across the city to think of taking the building we built 30 years ago, which is a really good building, and completely gutting it. So I don't know at what point in your process, because I was coming to a couple of the later meetings, you were when you came up with $33 million. But it seems to me, even though you were only preparing for a grant application, as opposed to preparing a set of schematics for approval, still keeping a close watch on that budget, I agree with Amy's concern indicated by her question that
you know, I think going forward it'd be wise to keep a close handle on costs. And of course costs escalate, and some things more than others, but nothing has doubled between last spring and now. You know, I don't know what it is, but and I also heard you say in our presentation the other night, which makes sense in concept, but I heard you say that, you know, you wanted to be totally inclusive of anything that might come up as the design would develop over time, but because you had one shot at asking for a grant. So my sense was from the design review meeting that I attended, at least the last time, that maybe you were including things that were not reasonable to include. The roof comes to mind. You know, so...
When I mentioned the first two things that were obvious, things like that cost, that was one of the two big ones.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, because that's a slate roof, which is a 100-year roof, and the building's 30 years old. So, I think our building staff is pretty well stressed with work. I can understand on the one hand why this, you know, this seemed to be a project where you're shooting for putting in an application. So you're not shooting for getting a perfect set of schematics. On the other hand, now you have time to get that really good set of schematics and work it out and work more closely with us, we hope, over the years to hone in on what kind of a program we can actually build.
Yeah, on top of the requirement, I'm afraid, is that you need to come up with a plan that's at least good for a 20-year long-term view of everything. And certainly as the last 25, 30 years has been the most active changes in the library field in terms of how things organize and get done and what the public expects out of it that has been a long, long time. And, yeah, there were certain things about the building, the way it was set up 25 years ago that, certainly caused it to not to get that construction grant application in 1989 denied. The questionable decisions about what was put in where part of the building. So we were trying to work through those things, and it was obviously a bit too much.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a docket item for you now. It'll be on our next docket to invite you to come back anytime you're ready.
Okay.
Come and talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody else? No more comments? We're joined by Councilor Schwartz in time for the meeting. Actually, we have our vote to take. What we're doing here tonight is we're voting no action necessary on the two items before us, because in a nutshell, the library is going to delay its grant application till the next round and work on an alternate plan in the meantime.
And one question to clarify.
No. Yes.
I think I read this at our last discussion of this. In the actual docket item, it says at the very end that once this passes, you would, it's the authorized library trustee to accept and extend any such funds when received without further appropriation. And I'm still not clear what that means. I'm still in 3A16.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think I actually said the trustee that officially decided to not file the grant. I didn't mean that. But that is a requirement that the state put in there due to a poor experience in other projects probably decades ago where they thought everything was in line and the grant was awarded and they were ready to sign the contract and realized that the town hadn't actually voted to accept the grant. And took a legislative process, which at a non-city level can take some while to get done and delay the project. So they required that to be put in there. And of course, it was moot because they wouldn't sign a contract with us unless they come up with our local funding.
Right.
So,
okay. So
it's,
you know, anytime.
I know it's not
relevant
tonight,
right.
Comes back, I just wanted to.
It only applies to the grant, of course, too. Right? So it doesn't mean that we don't have to make an additional appropriation. We do. But we don't have to accept and appropriate the grant itself again.
I
so normally grants go to...
If they grant, then we're good. If they grant the whole money, then we're stuck. Plan.
Which would be money.
Okay.
So,
Are we ready to vote?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a motion to NAM these two items and take them together?
So I'll move it.
All right. I'll move by Councilor Albright. All in favor? Unanimous in public facilities.
Okay, motion and programs and services. Councilor Santiago, all in favor of NAM. It is unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Look forward to working with you over time.
Thanks.
We
the
are
adjourned. Oh, my gosh. 8 o'clock?
I think it's a good